Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. November begins, and if futures hold up, we will get record highs for all the major indices at the open. Big week ahead, lots of travel and consumer earnings, got a Fed meeting, a jobs number, ISM manufacturing in an hour. Our roadmap begins with a new month, new rally. Futures point to a higher open as investors bet on more gains into year's end.
Plus, there's a shakeup at Barclays. CEO Jess Staley is stepping down effective immediately, this following an investigation into his previous relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
And stranded passengers, American Airlines canceling more than 1,700 flights this Halloween weekend, the latest mass disruption as carriers struggle to handle a rebound in demand. Markets, though, everybody, Jim, this morning talking about what happens when you're up 15% plus at this point of the year, 19 times over 70 years, and 18 of those times you're up another average 5%.
Well, a lot of it is how we got here. I mean, I think that how we got here is that almost everybody reported better numbers despite the supply chain. People bought into the disappointment if it was supply chain. Look at Apple. Didn't really go down much. And I think that there's some things going on the autos. Maybe they can turn. On Semi just put out some great numbers. I'm looking for the autos to be able to get some supply in 2022. That could be very big. So, I mean, with the exception of Tesla. I mean, Tesla's actually a phenomenon we have to talk about because I've actually never seen a stock go up endlessly on nothing. David, Tesla, when did we last see a Tesla, David?
When did we last see a what?
A stock like Tesla.
It's been quite a while.
When? Name me one.
Oh, come on. We've had periods of parabolic moves.
Digital
no, I
systems?
Mean, what are your snowflake thing? They love, remember when that
Frank
thing
Slootman?
Went parabolic?
Oh, but
parabolic
this isn't
in the
Slootman?
Summer of, that was summer or fall of a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, Slootman put up some good numbers.
He did put up some good numbers. This thing put up some good numbers, too.
Are people still short this thing?
There were some positive headlines last week about Hertz, but you're right. Listen, it's a market now, it seems as though there's people's imagination is being sparked again.
You want imagination, you go right to Adam Jonas's piece this morning about our favorite EV stock is Ferrari. By the way, he hates Ford, so obviously Ford versus Ferrari, Ferrari wins. Pricing power, he's saying that there's a two-year wait list. Two-year wait list, that's a lot. I mean, wow. Now, this is a great pricing power. This is one of the greatest reports I've read, and I happen to love Best Brand. This is a must read.
But a lot of these EV-related names are moving higher, ones that have even more hope rather than reality, perhaps.
I mean, Lucid?
We've talked a lot about
Lucid. Have you ever driven a Lucid?
I've been in a Lucid.
Then what'd you think?
It was very nice.
Right.
It was very nice, but I don't believe Lucid has all the other things that go along with Tesla that at least make you think that there's great promise for other parts of the business. Lucid is purely luxury EV.
It goes 0 to 80 faster than Tesla.
Great mileage in terms of off the charge. We know that, but that's what it is at a fairly high price point. They're starting to deliver their dream edition. But that's got the same market value as Ford.
Well, okay. You're doing that?
Yeah, I'm doing it because it's true.
Well, what does that have to do with it? I mean, Ford, can I just say that Ford, I have to turn away from you because you're ridiculous.
Why am I ridiculous?
Because Ford's making a major move. Ford.
Wait a second. Maybe you're saying that Lucid's price is ridiculous by saying that I'm ridiculous.
Well, I'm just saying that Ford.
You don't want to say
yes.
That.
I'm saying that Ford's going to have a separate
yes?
EV division.
You said yes.
No. Look, Lucid is. I love the Lucid, but Ford had an amazing quarter. And they actually, David, they instituted a dividend.
Yes,
dividend.
We did. Ford. It's been an incredible call.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Go in the Wayback Machine. Ford has a dividend, and then Exxon boosted its dividend.
Well, and a lot of this, too, the Jonas note is about valuation. His argument is you're getting the EV business at Ferrari for, what, $1 billion? versus
but
the
we
cost
need
of-
more Jonases. Jonas is thought-provoking. By the way, he did a QuantumScape. Is QuantumScape teach it? I know you had always been close to QuantumScape. But, you know, I think that what he does is get you to think, okay, you want EV? How about quality EV? I think that Adam's very good.
I hear you.
Well, you know where I'm coming from? Are you buying what I'm selling?
And back to your original point on Tesla, the stock was $800 in the middle of October. And here we are now at 1114. So, well, I mean, that's about $314 billion. It's pretty easy.
But where's the Tesla?
$314 billion in market value
How many Fords is that? How many Fords is that?
It's a lot of Fords, my friend.
At least probably two in one day last week.
Might be about five Fords.
It's part of an ongoing debate about whether or not they're ever going to face real competition. Piper's point last week was that all of the models that have come to date have not made a dent.
No.
But then you look at Roth, for example, last week said the idea that they're never going to face a really compelling competitor is specious.
I think the idea that they're not going to be able to go up against Ford and the F-150 electric, the Lightning, I think that's significant. American car company really doing everything it can EV. And now, unfortunately, GM had dropped a bomb. It was like a lead balloon. It was like lead tasso. I'm still trying to figure out what the heck happened. Because Ford is still on a rampage.
Ford added a Ford. Lucid's going to be a competitor at the high end. Rivian's going to be a competitor for
how many
for
orders?
Pickups and
I saw Amazon.
Spang just did 2 months of 10,000 deliveries.
By the way,
that went over like a lead balloon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Rivian, remember, Ford has a big slug of it. If Ford sells its Rivian, it could add a Ford.
It's true. Amazon also owns a good amount of Rivian which is going to be coming public.
Why did the autos become a fascination?
I was going to say, we're 5 minutes into a new month,
because
and
Tesla's
we're all talking about
because
EVs.
Because everyone I know, there are people who have abandoned, say, index funds and bought Tesla, and they're geniuses. They're geniuses.
Unlike active managers who are not.
Right.
They didn't buy enough Tesla.
They own Tesla and they own Ethereum.
Or enough Alphabet, because most active managers are trailing. Hedge funds, by the way, have had a rough month, from what I understand.
Why didn't they just own Tesla?
They were not up 7% the way the market was.
Why didn't they just own Tesla? Was Tesla so hard? I've been recommending Tesla ever since I drove a Tesla 2 years ago.
Because if you want to live in the land of sort of fundamental valuation, it becomes somewhat hard to argue that you should buy Tesla.
Allison, why don't we finish the aisle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned supply chain, Jim. Reuters with a fascinating piece out this morning that a lot of toy makers in particular are looking at gluts, worrying about gluts in the future. Gluts, double ordering, and then maybe a few months from now, a fresh look at disinflation.
Well, that's the Kathy Wood item. I know that Inan Kreis from Mattel, he doesn't seem to be worried at all about Christmas. David?
Why not?
They have a lot of supply. They have what he needs. They do. There's a really important note today about how Costco, Target, and Walmart will have what you want. And I think that's very important because these companies don't miss. And I think that those stocks are going to go still higher. I'm in awe of Costco here.
Yeah, we talked a little bit last week about some of the scale. The largest players, and Home Depot and Lowe's as well in that world,
right,
are able to manage their supply chain a lot better. They just have so much more power.
Well, they have pricing power. They have they offer. It's a Stiefel note. I recommend the Stiefel note. Costco, 475 to 515. Big box retailers. Walmart and Target. Remember, Target has this fabulous their own brands. Cat and Jack. You go there when you go to Target. Their own brands are better. It's like Costco. Kirkland's better than.
I've been to a Target in the last few months. Yeah, I went. Actually, I went the other day. I was looking for something. Didn't find it. It was good. I liked it.
How about Chipotle? Been to Chipotle?
No.
We're not going to spend the morning going down
Chipotle
the list of where
again?
David's
Didn't
been.
John Oliver do that with you enough,
right? Jim, I know you took note this morning of Morgan Stanley's Mike Wilson, who argues that you got the Fed tightening at some point, EPS slowing, the risk of consumer demand flattening out, and says that this seasonality trade that we've been benefiting from could last until Thanksgiving, but not much longer than that.
What a party pooper he is. I mean, he should have just, ever since he went negative, I mean, look, I'm going to leave it as he's a nice person.
Oh, boy.
I mean, look, Costin, comes up with new stuff. No corporate tax hike. I think Costin's kind of a little more on the bullish side.
Yeah. They were looking for EPS growth of about 2,
right,
incorporating some more dramatic tax moves. And now they think, well, obviously it's not going to be that bad.
No.
Plus 5.
Look, I got to tell you, I literally think that we're in some sort of bizarre halcyon period. Like, you start, November is, once we're through October, actually the last 6 days of October have been terrific. I hesitate to even see, I mean, when onsemi reports a great quarter this morning, which is auto, and by the way, we have NXP after the close, that's auto. They have chips, they have what you need. I think that ON is a good indicator. Maybe they actually give you a sense that we could be out of this just morass of semiconductor villain. I mean, there isn't anything. There are no companies that you ever read about that are not affected by the semiconductor shortage. And I still go back to what Tim Cook said. That was very jarring. He said the semiconductor shortage could be worse this quarter.
I know, but on the same day, U.S. Steel said, we're delighted to hear from our auto customers who are ramping up builds in Q4 and Q1.
Well, that's I don't know how they're going to do that. You need, if you have one semiconductor piece missing, you can't ship.
I know. Well, meanwhile, Amazon complained about specifically the cost of steel being one of its key drivers of why it's spending more money.
Okay, so how about the idea that Europe is going to be able to ship a little more steel here? Not much. Look at the fine print. It's 3.2 million tons.
We're watching Harley this morning up in the pre-market on that, yes.
Harley, look at, and these are those bizarre tariffs that were put on by President Trump. Remember, there was the whiskey tariff?
I do. Right, those are being lifted in the EU. So that's
very
going to be
positive.
Beneficial to Harley. You can see that stock is going to be up sharply in the when we open.
Well, that kind of runs Harley's very good, but the problem is, again, it's the demo. The demo is me. When I go to a Harley, I go there to feel young.
It is you, although you should have a ponytail.
You got the goatee going.
You need to have a ponytail.
Between Sunrise Senior Living and Harley Davidson, I'd much rather go to Harley Davidson. I want a Route 10. This is fantastic. I got on it. I was like, wow, this is really good. Lowered the whole demo.
No, did you drive or just sat on it?
Just sat on it. What are you scared?
Yeah, be careful.
You have to move on. This is one of the great slogans. There's so many years saying I have to move on.
There is some news.
Great here.
There is some news in the banking world today. Barclays says that Jeff Staley is stepping down as CEO following an investigation into his previous relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Let's get to Wilfred Frost for the latest. Morning, Wilf.
Good morning, Carl. Yes, indeed. So Barclays CEO Jeff Staley stepping down after the bank was made aware of the results of a probe by UK regulators, the FCA and the PRA, into the way he described his relationship with sex offender Jeffrey Epstein and the fact that Staley has decided to contest the regulators. The results of the investigation have still not been released, in part because Staley is contesting them, and this latest development took both Staley and Barclays by surprise. They did not know that the regulators' conclusion was due imminently. A Barclays statement added, quote, "It should be noted that the investigation makes no findings that Mr. Staley saw or was aware of any of Epstein's alleged crimes, which was the central question underpinning Barclays' support for Mr. Staley following the arrest of Mr. Epstein in the summer of 2019, end quote. Staley will receive his base pay of £2.4 million and pension for 2021 still. That support from the board was something Mr. Staley referred to when we last interviewed him and asked him about this in June of 2020. Staley will be replaced by C.S. Venkatakrishnan, known as Venkat, a Staley lieutenant who will be committed to maintaining a significant investment banking presence, as Staley was previously. And guys, everyone's now waiting for that FCA PRA report and understanding why it finally reached its conclusion. Was it simply that they took their time, or was there some new piece of information that came to light? We have to say that the way in which the Barclays statement reads, and we've not seen the report they have, suggests that the former is the case, not the latter, but we await the full report now.
What I would say is that Barclays stock is doing quite well. I think at this point during Brexit, we wouldn't have expected that. They had some momentum. Stock's up 40%. Will it matter? You get an old hand in there. Will anyone even – does it not skip a beat?
Well, I think the interesting thing on the stock, as you point out, Jess, is they just reported earnings last week. It also highlights how blindsided the company and Staley were, because it was a very upbeat earnings call, taking questions of all sorts, and obviously this didn't come up at all. The bigger question over the last 3 or 4 years, and he's faced activist investors' threats trying to change his strategy, not just trying to question some of the wild card aspects of his leadership, and wanting the bank to pivot back to being just a retail UK-focused bank. Staley has wanted to build that investment banking presence, and the last year or so of results have certainly proved that was the right strategy. I think the fact that one of his lieutenants, a fellow JP Morgan alum who came over with him in 2016, who runs part of the investment bank, is taking over, shows that the board at least backed that strategy of Staley's, albeit the fact he's contesting another regulatory probe just became too much for them to keep him in place.
Wilf, appreciate that very much. Wilfred Frost on Barclays.
Because I thought that the major resignation today would be Jenna Owens from GameStop, because she came from Amazon and Google. But this is actually a substantive news.
Yes. Remember, but we remember that day that the appointment was made at GameStop.
Yeah, the stock actually dropped that day, but then people got excited, and it showed that maybe there's momentum. David, some people are saying the momentum of the turn has stalled, but Ryan Cohen doesn't think that. What do you
think? Stock is still there at $180+ a share.
That's between Barclays and GameStop. Which would you rather?
I don't play. I don't.
The answer is games.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so that was
just
rhetorical.
Kidding. Barclays, okay. I think. The banks are so strong. This is just their moment. No one talks about them because they're so boring to begin with. But I'll talk about them. They're good. They're no Ferrari.
There is some calls this morning on B of A, which we'll talk about. Also, Intel,
side.
Spotify, Starbucks, TripAdvisor. Take another look here at the futures, and we'll kick off November in about 15 minutes.
One in eight. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Full serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can por help favor, you grow Adams. From here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
One in eight. Start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
More travel trouble for American Airlines. The carrier has canceled at least 270 flights this morning. That's according to FlightAware, on top of nearly 2,000 cancellations over the weekend. American cited poor weather and staffing shortages. We've been through this with Southwest last few weeks. Jim, you were pretty tough on them at the time.
I have to be. There is a sense that Southwest is just not the old Southwest. I know that's painful because I like Gary Kelly so much, but there's an investigation to a pilot starting a chant that I don't really want to go into because it's so scatological. I don't know if you caught that, David.
I did.
And that's not the way to go. And I think United is the best. They're ready. Ryanair had some pretty critical comments about Boeing, saying that Boeing was, I don't know if you caught that, David, delusional. Because they tried to put through a price
hikes on the MAX.
Yeah,
right?
The delusional. O'Leary. I want to emphasize delusional. Because I thought that was...
I've actually been fascinated by your ability to navigate Boeing, even though you really don't like it very much, and yet you continue to own it.
Is it the investment club or charitable trust? Well, same
thing.
Recommending the investment club. No, because the investment club recommends more than I can.
I see.
But
so
I
you
do,
actually own this.
My charitable trust owns it because I genuinely believe that the Chinese are going to come in.
And you don't really recommend it.
Well, sometimes when you have a recommend list, it's a kind of a hold. I just have a hold on. I am waiting for the big Chinese order.
You asked Calhoun about that last week.
Yes, yeah. I did. And it's kind of Godot-like. It's a bit of a Godot fashion. But yes. I do think that, look, we just made some deals in Europe. Anything can happen.
Yeah,
but
she didn't travel there.
No, she's
he's not
kind
in
of in
Glasgow, which is,
he's in
given
transit.
They are the number one emitter of carbon in the world, one would have hoped that the Chinese premier would be at that meeting, but both right. Russia and China not.
But they are doing the dual mandate, trying to get ready for the Olympics. maybe so that you know, the air's cleaner.
At the same time, they have power supply issues in China, and they've been building a lot of coal plants to try to make up for it because, again, that transition can't happen overnight.
Coal's so awful.
How did Tom Friedman put it this morning? You got to leave your belt on before you put the suspenders. You can't be without both.
No. I got to tell you, coal is just, Germany has a lot of coal. We're the only ones that are just shutting down coal.
Coal is fetching quite a price right now. If you're operating a coal mine,
Norfolk Southern has not been able to ramp up because just no one was ready. No one was ready for half the things that are happening. I mean, really, it's like no one was ready. Like, I'm ready. Like, I woke up and said, I'm ready. I was going to wear a suit for Halloween, but I decided it was not that special.
Well, some kids dressed up as you wearing suits, I think, yeah.
I'd like to see kids go as Kramer. It'd be fun, right?
Yeah. That'd be good.
There was a woman once who went as Kramer.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll get the real Kramer and the real Mad Dash in a moment. Take one more look here at the pre-market as we kick off November. We're looking for all-time highs at the opening bell in a moment.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
After climbing almost 44% in the month of October, Tesla's going to lead your NASDAQ 100 gainers this morning. Once again, on No Real News, $1,139. We are going to get the opening bell in 5 minutes. Don't go away.
All right, let's get to a Mad Dash, and we'll count you down to the opening bell as well. You know, we had Kevin Johnson join us on Friday after Starbucks reported earnings.
Right.
Why do you want to do it as a Mad Dash today?
Well, because Stevens upgrades it, and they're talking about the market being short-sighted about these wage increases, that it actually could mean the competition, frankly, will lose because Starbucks is going to be able to maintain the employees and be able to have the growth. Now, I think a lot of us go to these stores, and we're always surprised. It's understaffed. A lot of restaurants are understaffed. A lot of restaurants have different hours now because they can't. Well, I think what Stevens is saying is really short-sighted to think that these pricing, that this kind of money in the pocket, don't forget also college, mental health, is bad. It's going to be good because it's a competitive advantage.
I remember reading it on Friday, where they announced these in December of 20, but by next summer, your average employee is going to be earning $17 an hour, barista perhaps as much as $23 an hour. But you were pushing Johnson on Friday about this being an investment year. Jim,
well,
he didn't seem to want to say that.
No, and yet the CFO really went heavy investment year, heavy as a theme. So what happened is that, you know, investment year is kind of something that you say, which just says, you know, we need some time. And Kevin, who has done a terrific job, is saying, ignore the man behind the curtain. It's going to be fine. Now, I do think that if they can take share and build a long, they can take share from other coffee shops, and they're also doing a lot of good stuff technologically. I was surprised that the stock got hammered so badly because the numbers were roughly in line.
What's wrong?
Well, I like to be able to hear you guys. It's just something, I don't know, just something I learned when I was little.
This is nothing compared to the usual crowd.
Well, I just forgot. It's Monday, and I had a... You know, kind of a squid-like weekend, and suddenly here we are.
Well, let's get to work. There's the opening bell and the CNBC real-time exchange at the big board. It's Athena Consumer Acquisition Corp. celebrating a listing at the NASDAQ. It's Fluence Energy, an energy storage company, celebrating its recent...
The story is on. The story is on semi, because on semi is very much auto. Auto's up. We need to see these automobile companies get all that ON has. They need chips from everybody. Global Foundries was an IPO that came last week that is going to be very important for the autos. It didn't even matter to anybody. Global Foundries was a gigantic deal. Tom Caulfield, David, he's going to do a great job for the Autos. I have Gina Raimondo on tonight. Now, she wants to talk about the Harley deal. I'm going to press her on the semis. Look at that one semi truck.
Yeah, man. You know, it's funny. I mean, I got to know the company a little bit because over a year ago, Jeff Smith made it one of his sort of names at Starboard. They liked it a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was a combination. You know, it's just a good combination. And El Khoury is just so, Hassan El Khoury is just so terrific.
You're having Gina Raimondo on tonight, huh?
Yeah, I know. Why not?
Why not?
Harley, negotiate that deal.
Yep.
I want to, you know, let's talk about steel. Don't want too much steel coming in, but most importantly, she is leading the charge to get that $53 billion out of Congress to start building fabs, in part because of the idea that maybe we shouldn't be so hostage to Taiwan. Taiwan being a place where the PRC...
Understood, but it still takes time.
Well, no, but we want to push this so it doesn't take as much time.
Well, yeah, all right. So how do you do that? Well, you can build a foundry in what? Doesn't it take a few years?
It takes 2 years.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. We want to get the equipment. We want to start building. We want to figure out what state it should be in. Let's get it going here.
Well, then, as far as the labor shortages go, Secretary Yellen did say that labor force is still 5 million short of pre-COVID levels. A lot of that, she thinks, is due to fears of COVID and child care, which is part of this pending bill. And we'll know more on Friday when we get NFP.
I know. We still continue to hear that people are afraid to go to work.
I don't believe that. Do you believe that?
I think we kind of are moving on.
I don't believe people are really
afraid
to go to work. They don't want it. They don't want to go to the office.
We keep asking where the people are. We keep asking.
You know what? Listen, there may be people who don't want to actually return to the workforce, as Carl says, in part because of child care. Although, again, I think all schools are open at this point.
Yeah. How about the backlash about millennials?
You are now at the point where children 5 to 11 can be vaccinated.
Right.
Very soon, molnupiravir will be on the market. Other antivirals will potentially be available as well. Caseloads are down across the country, thankfully.
Daily vaccinations yesterday were 2x a week ago.
Then where are the people? What are they doing?
A lot of them might be doing gig work, starting their own businesses.
That's going on with trucking. A trucking company started by two or three people. I do think that we got some declines we got to monitor today.
Advanced micro workforce entirely. I mean, that's also been the story.
How do you eat?
You don't necessarily believe it's a great resignation. I hear different things about whether it's real or not.
So what do you do?
But it does appear that there is some cohort that has just said we're done.
Where's the money that comes from to be able to sit at home and not work?
I don't know.
And to that point, the saving rate is now back to 7.5, lowest since December of 19.
So they're spending some of their
savings. They're going to need income at some point. No more sitting on
your exactly.
Nest
and I still am focused on the millennial rebellion, David.
Which is what? Embodied by what? What is the millennial rebellion? Not coming to the office.
The millennial rebellion is twofold. No. One, they wear whatever they want. And two, they work when they want.
Okay.
Well, it's not the way it was when I was growing up.
No, it wasn't. Nor was it the way it was when I was growing up. But it is the way it is now.
No traffic on Mondays, no traffic on Fridays.
None.
But they're working just as hard at home
as they
did.
That is the world we live in and likely will be living in. This is an experiment still in terms of people not working from an office regularly. And we may readjust in a couple of years. But for now, it's the way it's going to be.
Which is one reason why Trip gets a downgrade today.
Yes, people aren't traveling the way used to. The patterns are unusual. Plus, I mean, given what Phil's been saying, not only unusual, when you get there, maybe your flight's not ready.
Yeah.
What is that about?
Well, we've talked a lot about business travel, which it's hard to imagine will ever come back to what it was pre-pandemic.
Other than Tesla, is anything really working? Tesla got parts.
New highs on every major index.
No, I'm saying that Tesla didn't have big supply problems. Everybody has supply problems. I'm still stunned by that Apple quarter. And then how the stock didn't get hit. I mean, it's like, so what? I'll get the 13 Mac Pro. It's fine. But you get the 13, it's like, who cares? I mean, here you go, 13. No. I mean, now the quarter was amazing, but the fact that Apple can't get chips, who's getting chips? Who's getting them if they don't get them? Other than PepsiCo.
PepsiCo's.
They got all the chips you want.
They got a lot of chips.
Too many.
Maybe so.
Maybe inventory problem.
Are you a believer? I think it's 54 days to Christmas as of today. There's a lot of talk about gift cards being a much bigger deal because the actual physical good won't be available. And then physical retail. People are searching for the terms open near me. As people say, I'm not going to wait for this Amazon box. I'm going to go down the street.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Kohl's lot was packed.
Was it?
It was packed.
Well, what's on the shelves is also a question.
I don't know.
And then you've also got this issue of, is it worth advertising when you actually don't have any goods to be selling?
Don't have inventory.
And that is an issue that seems to be concerning some as well. Whether we're going to see a reduction in spending for a period of time.
All right, so what's the IPO that is most exciting to you, the one that's coming?
What, that's coming?
It's no, in the last year. What's your favorite IPO?
I don't know.
Dutch Bro.
Oh, Dutch.
Have you seen Dutch Bro?
I was going to mention it when you mentioned Starbucks as your mad dash.
I need you to look at Dutch Bro. Dutch Bro may have a competitive disadvantage given the fact that this is one of the greatest stocks of our era.
Dutch Bro is up another 2%.
Yeah. That's because of the Annihilator.
What's the Annihilator, Jim?
Well, when I used to go see my daughter, I would leave the show on Friday, fly up to Searin, Oregon, and I would have an Annihilator on Friday so I didn't have to go to sleep on Friday night so I could spend more time with her.
What's in an Annihilator, Jim?
More than what's in body armor.
Body armor, that deal did happen, as we told you.
You broke that story.
This morning. No, I didn't, actually. Bloomberg broke it. We added some details on Friday, and we told people it would be announced today, $5.6 billion.
What do you make of it?
And that is the case. Nothing more than we discussed on Friday, which is it is an opportunity for Coke to try to compete against Gatorade. Pepsi, again, you're just mentioning chips.
Pepsi has so many new drinks. They're so incredible. I had the G2 after I worked out today. I was like, wow. That is one special group of chemicals. I think it should be covered by DuPont. Like the same guys, Frank Mitsch should cover that, right? These chemical analysts. I don't think that G2 should be covered by Pepsi.
It's not, right? It's not a beverage.
It's not a beverage. Yeah. It should be covered by the people who have supply chain problems. I think it's made in the southeast of America.
Looking at some of the biggest cap companies, Facebook is the only one that's up right now that I've got. Well, Tesla, obviously, is also up.
Facebook?
Because Tesla can't go down. Facebook is up 2%.
Facebook?
Yes, after last week.
No, that's...
Meta.
Thank you.
Sorry, I forgot.
Oh, my God, he's calling you Facebook. What, he's a throwback.
Am I really going to have to change
in 30
every
days,
time I look at
Facebook?
Not only you have to change, but you're going to go in the metaverse. You're going to go in the metaverse with me.
When the symbol changes, then I will know that it's Meta. But right now, it's still Facebook.
I am telling you, I went back over that video.
We call it Meta Platforms now.
I went over that video.
Meta
you got
platforms.
It.
That's really rolls off the tongue.
I'm going to go surfing with you and Mark.
Really?
Yeah.
In the metaverse.
In the metaverse.
Mark's quite a surfer.
Well, I saw him do that thing on July 4th. No, that was very impressive.
Did you see what Eric Schmidt said in Maureen Dowd's column over the weekend?
Yes.
The world is going to get more digital than physical, not necessarily the best thing for society. That's Eric Schmidt.
Eric Schmidt was basically saying the Matrix is coming because he was saying the combination of the metaverse and AI, which is going to, he agrees with Musk, it's going to be out of control,
let me tell you something.
Take over, and we're all in the Matrix.
He's number 457.
We're all basically living in pods, providing energy to the machines.
He's number 457, Eric
Schmidt. On the billionaires list?
No, with the squid.
Number 456.
Yeah.
He hasn't watched it.
I watched the entire thing.
Then why didn't you understand my 456?
Well, I didn't get from Eric Schmidt to Squid Game.
No, because he says Matrix and Twit. Never mind.
Yeah. Crypto's got a little news today. Morgan Stanley launching coverage, Jim. With a big fat
I got to take that home. Because that's between Anna Karenina and that, forget it. It is short. It's less than War and Peace. But look, I have to tell you, can we just say that we've had the big credit card companies? No one is actually of theirs using Ethereum to buy anything. They're not Bitcoin. No, they're investment.
Okay.
And by the way, can we go back to Robinhood? That was a big quarter.
Well, it reminds me, too, of AMC, which, by the way, says October was the best month in 20 months.
And he's not come back to me. It's become a disappointment.
But Adam's been embracing...
Oh, never mind. He just gave it to me.
Crypto as a payment.
He has. And that market value stays right there at $18-plus billion.
I know.
And GameStop, as we said earlier, stole $185 a share stock.
Even though Jenna left?
They got memed, and they never got unmemed.
Well, Melissa has a special on it, which I think is really important because the changing face of who's an investor and how much smarter they are, Tesla. Oh, my God, we really do call it Meta Platforms, huh?
Yeah, we call it Meta Platforms now.
See Jensen Huang about this.
Well, NVIDIA was, you know, quietly one of the best performers last week, Jim. Part because I think we talked a lot about the metaverse, and you talked a lot about Jensen.
Jensen was first with metaverse
ambitions in terms of what he really sees. He doesn't call it the metaverse, but
no, he's got another, but he does think it's going to be 10 times what the regular world is.
Right, he's helping to create the matrix as well.
He's talking about the world being a better place because if you're lonely, which there are so many people who are lonely, then I don't know if you saw that Lane Johnson special this week at the Eagles. Depression.
Yep.
I think that one of the great hopes could be being able to get in a room, be with a lot of people you want to be with, even if they don't exist.
It's going to be a brave new world. There's no doubt about that. Guys, we got record highs on the Dow, record highs on the S&P, record high on the NASDAQ. We'll keep our eye on the bond report as well, as we obviously have a Fed meeting coming up. Decision in a couple of days, along with the jobs number on Friday. There's a look at the indices. And we'll keep our eye on the 10-year at some point. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street. Rick Santelli here with breaking news at CME HQ. We're awaiting our October final read on market manufacturing PMI, expecting 59.2, which was the mid-month read, but we lost ground. The final read will end up 58.4, which happens to be the lightest read of all of 2021. As a matter of fact, to find a lighter read than 58.4, you have to go to December of last year. We have the ISM manufacturing indices coming out at top of the hour for a comparison. Right now, we're up a handful, 5 basis points in 10-year note yields at 1.60%. Squawk on the Street will return after these messages. Don't touch that dial.
A lot of headlines regarding the Treasury Secretary this morning as she is in Europe. She did tweet that she met Bono, who, of course, has done a lot of work regarding climate in the last, say, 20 years, with a little bit of a ode to his lyricism. It's a beautiful day.
Look, I think it's a very different administration from the previous administration, because I don't see anyone in the previous administration hanging out with Bono. But, yeah, I mean, look, we're over there in a charm offensive, just a total charm offensive. It's just a redo of what we did before, and I think it makes it so that Europe and the United States are closer than them. I think it does matter, by the way.
It doesn't matter?
It does matter.
Oh, it does matter, yes.
I think that matters for world commerce. Mm-hmm. We actually want to get along with them. We want to influence them, too. We want to get them away from Gazprom and toward Southeast American liquefied natural gas. That's our plan.
If we were only better at exporting it, then might be.
I know. Easy. Well, we, you know, Henry, boy, they see this at a high, Nat Giz. Thank you, Russ Brazil, for giving us that. We do need to export it. It's difficult. It's a major, engineering. If we went down there, I think we'd be shy. I don't know if you've been down there. That part of the country is still booming.
Yes.
They go to work there.
We do export, 15 to 20%, right?
Well, we have to do more. We have all we need, so we can keep exports. It's not like Australia, right, where they sent all these contracts that ran out.
Yeah.
We got 4606 on the S&P. Let's get to Bob Pisani this morning. Hey, Bob.
Morning, Carl. I wonder what Bono was showing her there. At least she knows a U2 record. It's a beautiful day. That's a nice sign from her. Meantime, we're at new highs, essentially, S&P, NASDAQ as well, Dow Jones Industrial Average. And it's being led by banks, which are back again, doing well. Nice move up for them. Energy's also good with the oil near $85. Consumer discretionary is on fire. I mean, every day for the last several weeks. It's just straight up a rocket. Tech's lagging because semiconductors are down, but not dramatically so. Meantime, moving the markets over the weekend, just an awful flurry of activity and interest. A very busy weekend here. The key for me is the margins still remain high in the S&P 500, 12.5% or so after record 13.5% in the first and second quarters. That's why the market's holding up so well. There's a lot of debate, again, still not settled about whether supply chain issues are peaking. I tend to think they are in automotives because of what Ford said. The yield curve, of course, flattening. That's kind of hard to figure out. You know, obviously short term coming up, but the longer term not going up much. That's not good for growth overall. And of course, we want to hear from the Federal Reserve this week. Ford last week came out and said semiconductor supply chain issues were easing a little bit. That's a real key right there, because remember the downturn in the supply chain, it all started with the automotive sector. When Ford made that kind of comment, by the way, we're sitting right near 7-year highs on Ford. I think that was a real turning point for the supply chain debate, at least regarding some of the semiconductors issues. Meantime, people are optimistic because, well, partly calendar. We're entering the seasonally best three-month period of the year. Not only are we entering the seasonally best three-month period of the year, we're going out of the worst three-month period here. So November to January is traditionally the best 3 months of the year. You're up about 4%. This goes all the way back to World War II. I thank my friends at the Stock Traders Almanac for giving us this information. August to October is traditionally the worst three-month period. So we're coming out of the worst into the best. It's traditionally down. That didn't work this year. The end of October had a nice rally, so we were up almost 4% for that three-month period. But regardless, you see other periods like February to April, March to May are all really good. This is that whole six-month period which tends to outperform the markets. Finally, I just want to note, we've heard for months now active managers saying that once we get the numbers in, you'll see active management outperforms in periods of high volatility. They make this claim all the time. We had numbers recently in the last couple weeks from Morningstar and S&P indicating that is not the case. There is no real change that's going on here. Over a one-year period for the last year, that should say 47%, not 75%. I'm sorry, that's a typo. But 47% of fund managers, active managers, outperform their benchmarks. Over 10-year periods, only 25%. And large cap fund managers over very long periods, 10 years, only 11% outperform. So, David, the problem here is there is no evidence that active managers outperform passive managers, passive indexes in the last year. And there's certainly no evidence that they're outperforming over much longer periods of time. Back to you.
I read your story yesterday with great interest, Bob, and actually noted it this morning as well. Yeah, active management. And by the way, terrible month for hedge funds, too, is what I understand. The October numbers, people have seen them tell me, not nowhere near the broader market return.
The one exception, David, bond fund managers did do a little bit better. We're going to have Jerome Schneider from PIMCO on. Those guys can take a little more credit risk than the index funds. So here's the one exception. Bond fund managers actually did do a little better in the last year.
Okay. Mm. Bob, thank you. Bob Pisani. Guys, I did want to get to shares of Discovery having what's a rare moment, which is up over 4%. Of course, been following this company closely as it continues to move forward in its deal to merge with the assets of AT&T, essentially Warner Media, and will become Warner Discovery. You can see it got an upgrade today, damning with faint praise at Bernstein. I mean,
yes.
They say we believe the linear TV business, which is the source of all free cash flow, face insurmountable structural headwinds. Meanwhile, the integration and rationalization of Discovery and Warner Media globally for both linear and streaming is a massive, complicated, daunting management task. Investors don't yet know how the combined company intends to go to market and on from there. But the big but, Jim, is this stock's fallen a lot in the valuation now, makes it more compelling. So it's a market perform, but that's enough to get it moving up 4%.
I thought the piece was actually quite good at setting you up for a chance to buy, and the stock has really fallen.
The concerns of shareholders. Is the linear part of the business? Is what is it going to look like in terms of HBO, in terms of Discovery Plus, their direct-to-consumer, and then the 5x leverage? They say they're going to deleverage very quickly.
Right.
That's going to be a key. Discovery will report earnings later this week.
I like the call. I mean, I like it. I've been negative, right?
Yeah.
And it's value added. As opposed to Lockheed Martin downgrade today. Thanks for nothing. Right?
Well, we're going to get an interesting, nice mix of earnings this week. Roku and Pins and Peloton and
Pins
Timo.
Pins had neutral. Why would you start and write a big thing about neutral? neutral.
Jim, let's do stop trading.
Yeah, okay, CrowdStrike. This morning, BTIG says there is competition coming. Now, downgrade to neutral. Now, I've got to tell you, this is that area where if you are in the cybersecurity, it's just been such a great time. So this is the first chink. And I've got to tell you, when I looked at this, I said, maybe the easy money's been made. And it's been just an amazing period. I still like Palo Alto Networks, but we've seen some, let's just say, if there are many companies into this, it was only a matter of time before they start bumping into each other. And so I like this piece. Gray Powell, good job. Fighting law of large numbers, incremental gains, potentially moderating. Those who have just hidden in cybersecurity, this is a wake-up call that perhaps you're getting late in stocks that sell at price to sales.
Remember, when these guys went public, it's now a $63 billion market cap.
It's very, very... Look, everybody needs these companies. We all know that. And I think the world of George Kurtz, I mean, he's terrific. But I've got to tell you, if you want to be in this group, you're going to have to both have on-prem and cloud. You can't just be one. CrowdStrike is cloud native, and Palo Alto's got both. They're on-prem and cloud native. And tonight, what a special show we have. Gina Raimondo, who is Secretary of Commerce, GXO, which is the logistics specialty, and then Ben Glick, which I don't know, David Element Solutions, you know that is his little quiz.
I don't.
Martin Franklin's got it.
Really?
Sir Martin Franklin.
Okay.
Yeah, Sir Martin Franklin's got it. What a show.
I've seen Martin in a while.
We're just getting started.
My God, today seems so benign. Doesn't seem benign. It's a benign day.
It's benign.
It's benign.
By the way, you can get the CNBC Investing Club with Jim. Sign up and find more at CNBC.com/investing club.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.